I'm Dr. Laura.
And I'm Ashley. And together, we're bringing you the Well Women Podcast.
The Well Women Podcast was created out of my passion for education and empowering women. I realized my patients were asking the same types of questions, but they weren't able to find answers. As I focused my naturopathic practice on treating period problems and balancing hormones, I wanted to share knowledge, tools, and actionable steps that women could take each week to change their life.
I'm a mental health coach and advocate, and I'm passionate about supporting people to be seen, be heard, and be well. I practice from a future focus and strength-based approach, which means that I believe you have all the answers inside of you. I just want to stand with you on your journey. I believe not everyone deserves to hear your story, but I really want to earn that right.
We hope that this podcast is able to teach you something, entertain, and help you feel a little less alone in this crazy world. Thanks for joining us.
And let's dive in. All right. So we have decided to change up the format of the Well Woman podcast so that it can be really engaging, bite-sized pieces of information to make your life easier and more enjoyable, and ultimately to be able to educate you and interest you and keep you engaged. So what we're going to start doing is the first segment is going to be women's health in the news. So we're going to explore things that are kind of trending at the moment, things that are interesting to us and to you. Then we're going to go into implementable strategies. We both believe it's really important to leave you with something that you can actually physically do after listening to our podcast. So strategies that can be taken into your life, really easy to understand and to implement. And then ultimately, we're going to finish with a question period. So whether it be questions that Dr. Laura and I see within our practice quite often, or questions that are submitted by you. So make sure you check out our social media, send us a DM if you have a specific question that you want answered, and we will absolutely do that for you. So we're really hoping this is a kind of a great way to keep you engaged and interested in a shorter period of time while still being able to educate and engage and keep you kind of interested throughout the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so excited to, continue to offer education in the way that we have been, but I think changing the format, we all are so busy. I want to make sure that everyone has kind of getting to the point, really, like, this is what you need to know, this is what you need to do, and then answering questions that that we see in our practices with our clients and patients, and that people are asking me all the time. I want everyone to have access to that information. So let's get started. This episode, I thought it was really fitting that we talk about, unfortunately, the pandemic, but not in a way that we haven't really touched on the actual virus, which we don't really plan to, but talking about pandemic and how that's been impacting our healthcare as women. Ashley, I'm going to start with you and just say, like, tell me about how the pandemic, if at all, has impacted your personal experiences with the healthcare system.
This is an interesting question because I didn't really consider it until now. I see a specialist every 2 weeks, and thankfully that hasn't been impacted by COVID whatsoever, so that's been grateful. However, I haven't seen my family doctor in well over a year now, which is strange because I was seeing him quite frequently. I also have a surgery coming very quickly, and I had not heard from the surgeon or their office. And I had to kind of stay on top of them. I called numerous times to make sure I was getting the appropriate things ready to go for my surgery. So I know that they're prioritizing other, you know, really important things, and I get that, and I very much respect it. But I also feel like a lot of things are falling through the cracks.
Yeah, and I'm gonna take a little bit more of a bold stance on it, and I'm gonna say it's been a year. Figure it out. That's what I'm going to say.
Right. Yeah. That's a good point.
In my opinion, there's a lot of other things a lot of people are, and today we're going to talk about women's health specifically, but there are a lot of people that are falling through the cracks with cardiovascular disease, with cancer. My specific personal experience has been with my son. For those who don't know, I have a 16-month-old, And he obviously has to get his vaccines and he needs regular checkups and he needs all of the things. And I'm going to just like put this very bluntly. When we go to get our – to have our regular appointments, the receptionist acts like we have the actual plague when we go. So she's not only – I understand the safety protocols. I understand the cleaning. I understand the masks. But being – I feel like there becomes a point where you're almost being treated like less of a human. And I can see it translating into the older population. I can see that translating into vulnerable populations. So I know what happens with myself, and when myself and my son come to the doctors, I know that I personally feel a type of way. I can only imagine if I was a vulnerable sector or I was an older person trying to seek healthcare, how that would make me feel.
I also wonder too, how impacted those with severe mental health issues yep. feel at the moment too, right? Like I can speak to my own mental health struggles throughout this time, but even, you know, being able to access the emergency room yep. if you are in crisis, like we're not allowed to bring people into the hospital with us. So yep. can you imagine being in crisis and having to leave your loved one at the door?
Yeah.
Like yep. that, you're right. It's been a year. Like, let's figure this out.
Yeah. And I think, and I just look back to, so mental health crisis, that's a very, very serious situation that they need help right there, right? If you're going to the emergency room with a mental health crisis, the last thing you want to do is be alone. That's the first thing. And then isolated by yourself, even when they do admit you in your room by yourself. Mm-hmm. So I think that's extremely harmful. I look back to even this as simple as 2 weeks ago, my son had a fever and I obviously stayed home with him. He was actually fine. Like he just had a fever. He was like still yelling and playing and all the things. But he had a fever. So I was like, you know what? Maybe by day three, I'll call his doctor and just see if we should come in. And the receptionist told me, oh no, if he has a fever, he doesn't meet the criteria to be able to come into our office. So you cannot come and bring him.
So you can't get healthcare.
I'm like, what? Isn't this the time where I would need healthcare if he had a fever? Like, isn't that the whole point? Why else would I bring him if he was sick? If he had a little bit of a stuffy nose, I'm not going to bring him to the doctor.
Oh, gosh.
So I'm a little bit sick of it. And so when I saw this this article, it further kind of fueled my fire of being like, you know what? It's been a year. We need to figure it out. We need to put some systems in place. People need help because too many people are being brushed aside. So specifically, I'm going to talk about abortion and unintended pregnancy. This is not a stance for debate. I don't care where you stand on abortion. However, more than 22,000 women die a year from unsafe abortions. And unfortunately, in certain countries throughout the world, and I mean Canada included, at least for the beginning of the pandemic, and I'm not really sure where we're at now, but millions of women have not been able to access contraception and abortion services during the pandemic. And they did a stat and they found across 37 countries, nearly 2 million fewer women received services between January and June versus the same period last year. And there was 1.5 million unsafe abortions and 3,000 maternal deaths.
Wow.
Yeah. So this is a problem. Now, anyone who listens to me knows that I am not an advocate for birth control, hormonal birth control, but I am an advocate for choice. I am an advocate for getting the services that you need. And guess what? If you are having unintended pregnancies and not having those monitored and followed, that is extremely dangerous to your health and the baby's health. And if hormonal contraception was the only reason that you weren't getting pregnant and there was a health issue why you couldn't get pregnant or you just were not ready to get pregnant, you do not have those supports in place.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm thinking of one of my close girlfriends is pregnant right now and having to navigate her appointments and having to navigate even just not being able to bring her partner with her.
Yeah.
My cousin had her baby about 2 months ago and not being able to have family members at the hospital. I get that. Like, we're trying to limit exposure, totally. But her and her husband were stuck throughout her entire labor, couldn't even leave the hospital to get a Tim Hortons.
Yeah.
For, you know, the whole time she was in labor. It's devastating, and it has huge, huge impacts for sure.
Yeah. And I, even on that same note, my girlfriend just had a baby last week. Same thing. They could not leave the hospital. They could not, like, go get, I don't know, a glass of water if they didn't bring it in the room with them. And it's, I just think back to my own labor and delivery, and no, I didn't want anyone there. I didn't want anyone to, like, be in my vicinity. I was, like, going through not a good time. But I think that, like, my husband left, went and got us food, went and drove my mom home. Again, my mom was in the room. I can't imagine. I cannot imagine. I know certain people have certain relationships with whoever in their family. For me, my mom is a medical professional, and so she's like a little bit of the level head. So I knew that when I was in labor, I needed my mom there. And I just can't picture that not being able to happen. Maybe for my second baby, I won't really care that much, but I know for a first baby, it's a lot. So I think that's really hard. And I think to, I guess, even extend that, like not having access, like you said, the appointments. I know that especially when partners have their first baby, especially when that baby has been conceived, maybe through IUI, maybe through IVF, maybe through a treacherous fertility journey, they just want their partner there in the room with them, and not being able to do those simple things that I took for granted when I was pregnant. I can't imagine not having access to that. And mm-hmm. like going a little step further, I'm thinking the fertility patients that I work with every day, like they come into the fertility clinic. So I'll just kind of put it into perspective for those who don't know, if you're cycle monitoring, so that's what it looks like when you're during your fertility journey, we do something called cycle monitoring. And basically you're coming into the clinic like basically every other day for either blood work, ultrasound, or both. And then you're getting an IUI or whatever you're doing, timed intercourse or whatever that looks like. For those who don't know, IUI is basically it's the same as like turkey baster, right? Like they take the sperm, they wash the sperm, they literally put the sperm in you after ovulation. So to do all that process, and to maybe come up with a negative pregnancy test at the end of it, and then to have to do it again, and kind of months on end, like to put it into perspective, there's about a 20% chance of success for a first IUI. So these couples are doing these not just once. They're usually doing them like 3, 4, 5, maybe 6 times. So that could be like up to 6 months of doing this. And a lot of women I speak to, and I'm like, what are you, like, how are you feeling? How are you coping? Who are you talking to? And not that they don't have access to healthcare, because they're being seen more than probably anyone, but they're feeling just as lonely because they have no one to talk to. Nobody, a lot of them, nobody even knows they're going through this.
Yeah, that breaks my heart. It really does. And I think we just need to be, you know, opening more doors right now as opposed to closing them. And I feel like we're closing them.
Yeah.
You know?
And I mean, like, mental health isolation during this time and pregnancy and fertility. Now you said you can see your doctors, which has been amazing, but I don't know that everybody can, right?
No, absolutely not. Yeah.
And obviously with pregnancy, there's lots of anxiety and stress that goes along with that. So being able to seek those supports for someone who's maybe suffered from postpartum depression or postpartum anxiety.
Well, you even think of too, like if they're accessing mental health support, so much of it is all virtual now. Yeah. And not being able to see their support person or yeah. connect with someone, you know, in person in a safe, supportive environment could be, you know, the make or break. And that breaks my heart for sure.
How do you feel about, so obviously what I do is virtual, and I don't really have a problem with that. Do you find that it's difficult for you doing virtual mental health support?
Yeah, I do. And actually, this is something that I've been thinking a lot about, and I think I'm going to start to shift and allow some in-person sessions as of now, since our restrictions are kind of lowering a little bit.
Yeah.
Because there are some people that, specifically because I do a lot of work with teenagers really struggle with that connection.
Yeah.
And like learning to trust me. Adults are a little bit different, but yeah, when I'm, you know, doing my first introduction over the, you know, Zoom, and them having to be like, okay, I have to all of a sudden trust this woman. Like, no, you can't feel my energy. Sure, you can a little bit, but that trust takes so much longer to build, and it takes us longer to get places. When if you were to see me in person, to meet me in person, to feel my energy in person, it changes the game, really, and it allows things to move quicker and that rapport to be built much faster.
Yeah, and I feel like we've underestimated the impact of like a hug, you know, that how far a human.
Yeah, I miss that.
like a human touch goes. I remember being in my office and again, I'm going to specifically relate this to fertility patients because it's an emotional journey. And there's a lot of times where someone has just experienced loss and I've been working with them for, I don't know, whatever amount of time. And all I want to do is give them a hug. Because it's been a really tough time. And you know what? Like, I probably want a hug too, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
It's just been tough. And so I feel like people are avoiding the doctors. Women are avoiding the doctors. And there's actually been lack of reproductive health screening as well. When was your last pap, Ashley?
Oh, well, I said I haven't seen my family doctor in well over a year. I can't remember when my last pap was, but I'm pretty certain if I called right now to say I wanted a physical, they would probably say no.
Yeah.
They don't want anyone in there unless, you know, something specific is going on, but like there could be, and you're just not seeing it unless you're looking for it. Right.
Yeah. And women, again, are delaying their paps because they're afraid to go into the doctor's office. There's a lot of like fear. There's a lot of fear.
Oh, yeah. I don't want to sit in my doctor's office unless I have to, for sure.
Yeah. You're like, well, I don't want to get sick. I don't want to. Mm-hmm. You can probably hear my voice is like a little bit nasally right now. I have, I don't know, a cold. Like other things exist.
Yeah. My allergies at this time of year are insane. So people are going to start being very scared of me soon.
Oh, and my husband is like the biggest like post nasal drip person. He has the worst allergies and he gets post nasal drip and he has this like cough. Oh my, we were at a mall yesterday and he coughed and I was like, oh my God, we're going down. We're going to get kicked out. I was actually listening to this comedian on Netflix. I forget his name. I wish I could like shout it out right now because it's so funny. But he does a bit at the beginning with the pandemic and COVID and how you're not allowed to cough anymore. Like it's illegal. Like you're not allowed to cough. But it's just, I think that for teens or again, vulnerable populations, you work with a lot of those, not being able to refill their birth control can be detrimental. And then I think of people who might be in unsafe relationships, unsafe environments, are not accessing the reproductive resources they need. I'm looking at like maybe they're not getting STI screenings when they should, or maybe they are again not practicing safe sex. Maybe they don't have the counsel, the tools, the education to understand their cycle, to know how to avoid unwanted pregnancy, and we're really not giving these women a choice.
For sure. I think of like the sexual health piece. Like typically when life is normal, quote unquote, I like to get tested, not super frequently, but like every 6 months-ish. I don't know if that's normal or whatever, but it just makes me feel more confident. Yeah. But this whole pandemic, like I have not considered it at all, because to go in and, you know, have to go through all of that sitting in the space with people who could possibly be sick, it's just, it hasn't even crossed my mind to be an option right now.
Yeah. And I think about my patients who have, I don't know, like what if they think that they have a yeast infection or bacterial vaginosis and they're not going to get a swab and it is an STI, something like that can lead to pelvic inflammatory disease, which can scar the fallopian tubes and impact reproductive capacity later on. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of, I just feel, I know recently I've been speaking to, I treat young people as well. And I find that the common denominator is that a lot of them don't know much about their sexual health. And I think for some girls, like I know there's some places where teenagers can go and get birth control that their parents like won't know, right? And I wonder,
is there? Where is that? Do you know?
Well, I think you can go. I think like the women's health clinics. Now, don't quote me, but there's.
Oh yeah, probably the health unit, like like the one on Bradford Street here.
Yeah, so I think you can go to different women's health clinics. Will offer those things. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not sure the coverage, but I actually. Did they make it so that prescriptions are covered for anyone under 25? I feel like that's a thing.
Yeah, I'm not sure 100%, but I would imagine from in those places, usually prescriptions are covered.
Yeah, so I'm not sure what that looks like in terms of the access, but I do know that there is, I mean, the article did state that there is women not refilling their birth control. They may not have access. They may not have a means to get to the clinic. They may not, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. It's a scary time because, again, like I said, when a woman's determined to end her pregnancy, she's going to do it regardless of how safe it is, how legal it is. For sure. So unsafe abortions happen a lot. And again, not having that support in pregnancy is huge just on its own.
So. Absolutely.
Let's kind of shift this into strategies because we're talking about reproductive health and reproductive screening. Let's talk about taking charge of your fertility and cycle, whether you're on birth control or not. Let's talk about how we can really take health into our own hands so we can understand our cycle. If you can't refill your birth control or if you haven't had access to getting proper screening, what symptoms should you look for? Like, how do we know when something's not right? First things first is if you are on birth control and you are taking birth control, we know that you can't actually track your cycle. Your hormones are not moving according to their natural ebbs and flows. They're moving according to your pill. And so that's kind of the first thing that we just need to really understand and wrap our brains around. But if you are off of birth control or you've decided to discontinue birth control, let's just talk about our menstrual cycle and a few things you need to really be conscious of understanding and knowing if you're going to take charge of your vaginal health, cervical health, all of the things. So let's start with what's normal in terms of discharge. We have discharge on a daily basis. If you are on birth control, you won't have that discharge, but it's going to change throughout the cycle. It can be anywhere from white to clear to like a little bit yellow, but there should not really be a smell. So if you're noticing that there is a smell or there is something like specifically fishy, we tend to see that's usually indicative of an infection, bacterial vaginosis. Any pain with urination is not normal. So that's something that you should be looking into as well. And always like bleeding after sex or spotting after sex is always something that you should ask about, see your healthcare provider about. It's not always going to be abnormal. It does happen some of the time, but making sure that you're really getting those investigations in the case where you haven't had a pap or you've missed your pap, really advocating for yourself. Because a lot of times young women, I feel, are dismissed when it comes to healthcare. We're less likely to get prioritized, so to speak, because we're quote unquote healthy, right? We're young and healthy.
Well, this is interesting you brought this up, actually. I was talking to my stepbrother's girlfriend yesterday. So she's 23. And she was telling me that she's not allowed to get a pap until she's 25.
What?
Not allowed. Even though she would like to. Even though her sister had an abnormal pap. So she obviously has a little bit of concern of maybe there's, you know, some genetic possibility of
something.
And she is not allowed. She has to sit and wait until she's 25.
Yeah, I think it's strange. I think now I do like they do base their recommendations based on like likelihoods and research and all of those things. I know the pap frequency in Ontario used to be less time, but now it is every 3 years. So the last time I had a pap personally was 2019, and it just feels like so long ago. But again, a lot of women think things are normal, or a lot of my teenage patients are asking their friends, right? Like sex will hurt or they're bleeding after sex and mm-hmm. they're asking their friends. And again, this is another problem we bring up with not having the access to the healthcare system in this time. Like I said, it's been a year. We have to figure something out because we can't continue going like this. we need to understand. So again, looking back, like really looking at your signs and symptoms, do you have pelvic pain? Does it hurt when you have sex? Are you spotting during sex or after sex or during ovulation? It may be normal. It may be fine, but you may want to, it may be something else, right? So mm-hmm. making sure that we're really looking into that. And then if you are postmenopausal, if you bleed, if you haven't had a period for over a year, any bleeding is considered a red flag. So making sure that if you haven't had those screenings and you are in menopause, to making sure that you're getting that kind of evaluated and looked at. And then from a fertility perspective, advocating for the use of condoms, really, because if you don't have access to birth control and that was your main method of contraception, you're going to have to track your period. You're going to have to track your cycle. But that's not usually reliable for the first maybe 3 to 6 months after you're off of birth control. So really making sure you're protected, especially from a sexually transmitted infection type of picture, and making sure that you are really advocating for yourself.
Yeah, I think that's key. And it's key in all that we do. And I'm a huge, this is kind of funny to say, I'm a huge advocate for people advocating for themselves. And something that I have to do a lot of is empowering my clients to advocate for themselves within the medical field as well, but from a mental health standpoint. But it's so important that we use our voices, because especially in times like these, they have so many other things on their plate, medical doctors and the healthcare system. So we can, if we're not loud enough, we can and will fall through the cracks.
Yeah. And I look at this from the perspective of even getting the proper blood work, advocating for digestive imaging. Like it goes beyond reproductive health. The amount of patients who have been brushed to the side and maybe they had a colonoscopy booked and now it is like they're postponing it or they cancel it or whatever else the case may be. And they're suffering at home with, maybe they have like severe digestive issues and mucus in their stool and blood and they're nervous as to what's going on and they feel like they don't have help. Mm-hmm. So I want everyone to be able to take away, my first takeaway is, if you don't already track your cycle, I want you to download an app. I want you to use that religiously to track your symptoms beyond just when your period starts and when it ends. I want you to put your symptoms in there. I want you to understand when things are changing with your cycle, when your fertile window may or may not be. And if things are getting alarming, if there are some symptoms that have come up and they keep coming up and you feel like you need that looked into, to really reach out to your healthcare provider, or if you're a patient of mine, you can kind of reach out to me and ask me if this is something you should be worried about.
Absolutely.
Okay. Let's wrap this up with our question. This is a question that I have been asked more than once this past week by, and kind of we're on the same kind of thing of we're talking about pregnancy, we're talking about fertility. But this question was, can a prenatal get you pregnant or increase your fertility? Ashley, is this something that you wondered, or is this something you knew, or tell me
where you're No, I knew, I understand that a prenatal, but I've also have a background in holistic health as well. So I understood kind of what was built into a prenatal. So I didn't assume that, but I can see how that could happen for sure. There's no judgment coming from me here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that beyond being asked that question, I think in the fertility setting, like in my fertility practice, I feel like patients are kind of mad at me when I take them off a prenatal when they're trying to get pregnant, because I have to explain, a prenatal doesn't get you pregnant, right? A prenatal is there to help build a baby. Basically, think about it as a multivitamin for women. And so the reason why it's for women is because it has folic acid and it has iron. And so those are two things that are really important to building a baby. And so we have all the other things. We have our B vitamins. We have everything else. But really, we have those foundations to help us build a baby. It's not going to help us get pregnant, though. We do know that building a baby requires a lot of nutrients. And so while we are pregnant, we're building that baby, a prenatal prevents us from being depleted from all of these nutrients and everything else. It keeps our iron levels up, which typically multivitamins wouldn't have an iron in it, because too much iron can be dangerous and we don't want men to take iron typically. But the folic acid again is going to help prevent neural tube defects. So typically in my fertility patients, my go-to is to give them an activated folic acid on its own, because the prenatal I recommend is 3 caps a day and it has to be taken with food. And so it's a lot if we're trying to achieve something else. So say someone comes to see me and they have PCOS or they have a thyroid issue. The first like plan of action is to really treat that issue and then go from there. And then once they get pregnant, I transition them to a prenatal. But I'm testing their iron. I'm testing their B12. I know if they have deficiencies there. And if they do, I'm supplementing separately. But I try to kind of get people on a very precise treatment plan and make sure that they're taking the right supplements for them. And that's not always a prenatal. And then kind of on top of that, when women are on birth control and they're choosing to stay on birth control, which is completely their informed decision, I am often keeping them on a prenatal because I want to replenish all of those depleted nutrients. And then when a woman already gives birth and has a baby, I like to keep them on a prenatal when they are breastfeeding. So those are the times in which I use a prenatal. And to answer your question, no, a prenatal does not improve your fertility and does not get you pregnant faster, but it does help replenish nutrients.
So that's one thing that I didn't necessarily know about a prenatal, is that we could, or there are benefits to taking it outside of the building a baby picture. Yeah. So I knew it wasn't necessarily going, you know, not, it wasn't going to get you pregnant. It wasn't going to help get you pregnant, but I just assumed it was something you took just to help, you know, build the baby. But now I'm learning that there are specific situations where it can be helpful to just support the body even more. So that was a new thing for me, a new learning. So thank you, Laura.
Yeah. And I mean, after you have a baby, you have to think you're so depleted. And if you're breastfeeding, especially, there's a lot of moving parts to that. So making sure that that you are taking the proper one, quality one, if you are choosing to take a prenatal. But if you are on birth control, I would actually highly recommend you be on a prenatal. And it does not impact your contraception in any way, shape, or form. Ashley, any closing comments or anything you wanted to add before we sign off?
No, I think just a reminder to get support when you need it, whether it be, you know, if you need it for your physical health, your mental health, please reach out. We are here to support in any way. And be your best advocate, because ultimately no one else is going to do it for you. So we will be here if you need it, but you just have to ask for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.